Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are back with Marty Greer and the Pure Dog Talk veterinary voice. We are talking today about always an interesting topic, and that is the canine influenza. I'm not going to use the word epidemic, but struggles that we faced here. So I'm excited to have you, Marty, come talk about some of that stuff.
Well, thank you.
And so lead us down this path of how we started with seeing some of these things and what we're going to look for as the new year approaches and how we can combat it most effectively. Yeah.
Sure. So the first cases of canine influenza were described in 2004. They were felt to have first shown up in a group of greyhounds, I think the racing greyhounds, in Florida. And they felt that it was a mutation from the equine, the horse form of influenza.
Right.
And the first strain was described that was called H3N8. I don't know why they start with 8, but that's where they start. So H3N8 was the first strain. There was a vaccine developed. The virus spread in the immediate area, the virus spread is pretty significant. It reaches almost 100% of the dogs that are in the immediate first exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 100% of those dogs become sick and infected. And then the further out it moves from that epicenter, the more attenuated it becomes. So then we see fewer and fewer cases.
Okay.
Then in 2015, there was another strain that they call H3N2 that started in a couple of different places. And they felt that it came in from some of the Korean meat dogs that were imported from the Asian countries.
Right.
So there have been these two strains floating around out there. And the concern is that there are no dogs anywhere in the world that have natural immunity to influenza. It's a new disease. It's not like humans. You know, influenza outbreaks have been happening in humans, you know, for hundreds of years, at least as far back as the Dark Ages and probably further back than that. But we don't have a previous history of dogs being infected with influenza and having this disease. So all of our dogs, unless they're vaccinated, are naive to the strains of influenza that are being spread.
And so to make a, I think, relatively comparable comparison, think of when smallpox came to the United States and affected the Native American populations, right?
Yeah, that's a really good comparison because, again, they were completely naive immunologically to that particular disease. So it hit really hard and it was really quite dangerous for the Native Americans.
Okay. And so as that 2015 virus started to spread out, that was the one that people are most concerned about most recently and really impacted a lot of dog show people and boarding kennel facilities and show kennel facilities, correct?
Right. And the reason for that is because of the way that people travel with the dogs that they're showing or competing with. They don't necessarily have to be just show dogs, confirmation dogs, but field trial dogs,
right.
Agility
right.
dogs, any of the dogs that are traveling for competitions come together on weekends. So they're all hanging out, sharing water dishes, sneezing, coughing, licking, doing the things dogs do, and then going back to their respective homes during the week and then sharing those diseases again on the weekends. So we've seen outbreaks. We had a parainfluenza outbreak here about 5 years ago over Labor Day weekend. From a similar situation with field dogs. And typically, parainfluenza is a pretty mild disease, but in this particular case, it was apparently a mutation of a pretty hot one, and we saw these five-year-old, intact male, top peak performing, really healthy dogs get sick. And the same thing is happening with influenza. It's not just the young dogs and the elderly dogs that are becoming the most sick, it's actually the middle-aged dogs, which is perplexing to everyone that studies immunology. It's usually the very old and the very young. And
right.
in this case, it's not that group. It's that middle-aged, typically very healthy, you know, robust dog that's ending up with pretty severe disease. And influenza in the dog causes a pneumonia. So it's not just an upper respiratory kennel cough kind of circumstance. It's a lot more serious than that.
Right. And so as we sort of wind down 1 year of competition and start aiming for the next one, this is a good time to be evaluating our vaccine protocols. Yes.
Yes.
So let's talk about, first of all, what does this look like when it hits? And then what can we do to prevent it from hitting our dogs?
Sure. So the symptoms start off looking pretty much like an upper respiratory kennel cough. There's a number of different organisms that cause kennel cough in dogs. We've recognized Bordetella, parrot influenza, there's coronavirus, mycoplasma, herpes virus, distemper, adenovirus, along with influenza. So there's a number of different organisms that all look very similar, and they're kind of lumped together under a CIRD, or canine infectious respiratory disease complex, as far as the classification goes. Symptoms are going to be starting off similar with coughing, sneezing, runny eyes, runny nose, but then it progresses to a form of pneumonia, some of which are hemorrhagic, and up to 8% of the infected dogs die. So this is not your garden variety kennel cough that just bothers you because the dog's coughing in the middle of the night and keeping you up. This is a really very serious disease that requires hospitalization, IV fluids, antibiotics, many times oxygen therapy. So it's bad. It's not something that we should just go, oh, yeah, you know, no big deal. It really is a big deal.
Okay. And so let's talk about treatment with the idea that, okay, I decided I didn't want to over-vaccinate my dog. I didn't vaccinate it for this. Now what's it going to look like in terms of how I'm going to have to treat this if my dog is affected?
Sure. And these dogs are going on antibiotics for up to 2 weeks. They're infectious for up to 3 weeks. So it's not recommended that those dogs go back to their daycare or competition or boarding or anything like that for at least 3 weeks after they're infected. So like I said, they need to be on IV fluids for hydration. If their SpO2 levels, which is the oxygen level, drops below 92%, the recommendation is put these dogs on oxygen. They may be on IV and oral antibiotics. They may need an antiemetic because some of them are coughing so hard that they're vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
It is recommended that they're not put on a cough suppressant if they have pneumonia based on an x-ray, because you want them to be able to cough up and get rid of the material that's accumulating down in the lungs. So we don't put them on a cough suppressant. And then they're followed up with x-rays. Once they're healthy enough to go home, they're coming back for x-rays to make sure that their pneumonia is resolved.
Okay. So a much easier solution to that is
to vaccinate.
There you go.
And I'm a follower. I'm a big fan of Gene Dodds. I'm a big fan of Ronald Schultz. We practice in the shadow of Ronald Schultz. He's about 50 miles from my practice. So he speaks frequently to our local kennel clubs. My breeders and my clients are very educated about vaccinations and protocols. However, despite Dr. Schultz's reluctance to vaccinate for a lot of organisms, when I've spoken to him directly, his recommendation is that all dogs, and I mean all dogs, should be vaccinated for canine influenza, particularly if they have a social life. So if they never leave your house and never see another dog, then they probably don't need to be vaccinated. But that's a pretty small percentage of dogs that don't go anywhere. Don't go to the pet store to pick up supplies, and don't go to daycare, and don't go to nose work class, and don't go to all the other dog events. So his recommendation, hands down, is that all dogs should be vaccinated because they are all immunologically naive. And there are two strains. Like I said, there's H3N8 and H3N2, and there are two companies that manufacture vaccines that cover both of those in one injection. So the first year, you give two injections 2 to 4 weeks apart, and then it's boosted annually. And the reason we're boostering annually is we just don't know how long the immunity is going to last yet. Since the vaccine has only been on the market since roughly 2016, we haven't got 3 years of data to know if these dogs are getting 2 and 3 years of immunity. We just don't know yet.
Right.
Many viruses are three-year protocols, but we don't know about this yet. So it's something that we want to be really cautious with. My own dogs are all vaccinated, my own personal dogs, and I've been on a three-year vaccination protocol with my own dogs since 1999. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm that veterinarian that pushes every vaccination every year for every dog.
Right.
I've been, you know, following those trends and know what that means. But this is important, and I don't want my dogs to end up sick. I've got occasionally a litter at home, usually about one a year, and I don't want my dogs to end up with this disease in my household. And we travel, we go to dog shows, we do all those things that many people do. So I want my dogs protected, and I want my staff's dogs protected, because you can take this virus home on your clothing, on your shoes. So I don't want my staff's dogs to become ill either, so we've recommended vaccinations for everyone that works here. Even if their dog doesn't go anywhere, they're not at low risk because of their exposure here from scrubs going home with little droplets on them.
Right. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it, because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-sections. Mm-hmm. But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those right. deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in mm-hmm. for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
And so I thought you mentioned just now baby puppies. So where do we add this into our vaccination protocols for our litters?
It depends on when you start vaccinating your own dogs, and that's going to depend a little bit on what their recommendations are. And we can at least briefly mention nomograms here. Nomogram nomogram is a titer that's done on the mother dog. And once her titer is done at University of Wisconsin's diagnostic lab and Dr. Schultz's lab, he does tests on the disease. He does a test, and it's called a nomogram. So what he does is interprets the results of the bitch's level to distemper and parvo, and we know from the research that the titers drop by 50% every 2 weeks. So he graphs that. He and now Dr. Larson, who is managing the lab, because I believe he's retiring. So they determine based on the bitch's nomogram and the assumption that the puppy's adequately nursed and didn't get plasma, he makes a determination for when you should vaccinate the puppies. And it's really quite interesting. We've been doing it for many of our pregnant bitches for several years, and it's quite fascinating because we're seeing a big variation in when puppies are ideally vaccinated based on that information. So this customizes a vaccination protocol for every litter, every puppy in every litter. So instead of having to just say, we're going to vaccinate it, 8, 12, and 16 weeks are now AHA, and some of the other organizations are starting to push back and say maybe that last vaccination needs to happen when they're closer to 18 weeks because of the better vaccines we have and better immunity that the mothers are passing on to their puppies. We're starting to see have, you know, some of these dogs needing vaccinations as late as 18 weeks. So I'm going to say that I try not to give too many vaccinations at one visit. The vaccine companies do tell us that the fewer times we put a needle into a dog, the better. So if I can use a combination vaccine that has multiple products in it and that's appropriate, then that seems to create fewer reactions. So by the time puppies in my practice get to be 12 weeks old, they're getting a lepto vaccination along with their distemper, adenopara, influenza, and parvo. So this is kind of a complicated answer because it's a complicated question. Influenza can be given as young as 7 weeks of age. So you can wedge it in between vaccines. So if you're starting at 8 weeks and then you're going to go to 12, then you may want to give it at around 9 to 10 weeks earlier if you've got a high exposure rate. You know, if you've got dogs in and out of your home that are going to competitions and seeing other dogs, you may want to do that a little bit differently. But the ideal place to do this is based on what your nomogram is. And you don't have to live in Wisconsin to use the Wisconsin lab. It's really quite easy for your veterinarian to send samples to that lab. And if they are reluctant to do so, just have that draw the blood on your pregnant dog, not within 2 weeks of whelping. So 2 weeks either side of whelping, all the antibodies are being accumulated in the mammary tissue for colostrum. So you don't want to do it when the puppies are born. You want to do it at the ultrasound when you confirm pregnancy. You want to do it when the puppies are 2 weeks old or later. And it takes roughly a week and a half to get a result back.
It's wonderful. For our listeners who maybe are new to the show, we actually did an interview with Dr. Gail Watkins talking about this. It was the first I had ever heard of it. I've been breeding dogs for, you know, pushing 40 years, and I'd never heard it. It was fascinating. I think it is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's very cool. And because it's new, not a lot of people are familiar with it.
Right.
But if you Google it, you can find information that pertains to it. So it's not difficult. You can look up the Wisconsin Diagnostic Lab with Ron Schultz and Lori Larson and very easily find the information on the address and where to ship the samples. So it's just serum. It's not anything too magical. It's just your usual garden variety blood sample. And then that gets sent to their lab. They run the sample once a week, and it takes 4 days to run the test. So you can call them every day, and it won't help but to speed things up. So I don't recommend that. Just like I don't recommend calling the taurine lab every day and asking them where your sample is, because they can only run them so fast.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I'll make sure I have a link in here for our interview with Dr. Watkins on this, as well as some of the other sources for this for Dr. Schultz's lab. But I do think that the nomograph is something that is going to revolutionize how we vaccinate our puppies for sure. And then my question on the flu vaccine, are we still giving that twice for these baby puppies, right? Like once at 8, 9 weeks and once at 13 or something like that?
Right. Yeah. You want to do the booster 2 to 4 weeks after the first. So the earliest you want to start is 7 weeks, and then you go out from that based on what else you're doing. And then you may make an extra trip or two to the veterinary clinic, but, you know, if it's the safest thing to do, then that's certainly the way that you should proceed. It shouldn't be about your convenience. It should be about what's most appropriate for the vaccination of those puppies. So it's a little hassle, you know. It's a lot of work to raise a litter of puppies.
It is.
If you're going to do it right, you're going to pay a lot of attention to when the deworming schedule should be, when the vaccination schedule should be, you know, how you can best maximize the puppy's health and their nutrition and all those things. So it's work to raise puppies.
Yes, it is. And so here is my question. My question is, many of us out here in dog breeder land vaccinate our own puppies. I have vaccinated my own litters of puppies for years, working with my veterinarian and all the rest of it. Talk to us a little bit about that. Pros and cons.
Sure.
Sorry, I dropped this one on you.
There are some really good vaccines on the market. What you want to do is make sure that you are using a vaccine that's endorsed by your veterinarian.
Yes.
Some of the older technology vaccines don't create the kind of immunity that's ideal for our dogs. So buying the least expensive vaccine is certainly not what you want to do. We recommend one of the vaccines that are guaranteed, that they guarantee the immunity behind. So that's going to be Intervet, Boehringer Ingelheim, Zoetis. So those are the vaccine companies that we're recommending for our clients to use. Vaccine needs to be handled appropriately. It should be kept refrigerated. We had an incident with a shipping from a manufacturer that the vaccines that were shipped to us were shipped in the wintertime. They got too cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got some reactions. You also don't want it to get too warm.
Right.
So if you are purchasing your own vaccine, not from your veterinary clinic, you want to purchase it from someone that ships it appropriately with an ice pack and a styrofoam box. And many companies do a really good job with that. And you don't want to use the least expensive vaccine or outdated vaccine. So if your vaccine is outdated because you bought a full tray of 25 and you didn't end up using it all, don't. Just don't.
Such
a bad
throw
idea
those
to use
away.
Vaccine. So, you know, there's some places I'm kind of lenient. If my milk is expired but it still tastes okay, I'm good with that. But I don't mess around with vaccines. When they're outdated, they're outdated. So you really shouldn't be using those. I also recommend that you always recognize where you have given that injection. In my hands, the December vaccination goes over the right shoulder. The Lyme vaccination goes over the left. There are certain specific things that we do so that if there is a vaccine reaction, if there's a lump or a reaction site, that we can report that to the manufacturer and know for certain that it was the vaccine that caused the problem. The vaccine manufacturers do want to know about this. They do report that on to USDA. USDA regulates vaccines, not FDA. So it's important that we're careful with where we vaccinate, that we're careful with how we handle the vaccine, and that we do them at appropriate intervals. Doing them too frequently or infrequently, too infrequently, those don't give you good immunity. So follow the package recommendations. They're very clear in the packaging, and it's not difficult to find that information. So talk to your veterinarian. Hopefully you're working with a veterinarian that's comfortable in having you do some of these things. The other thing is, you know, we don't charge very much for the vaccinations. Our office visit is reasonable so that you get a complete comprehensive physical exam on your puppies. But then we don't charge a whole lot for the vaccine itself because I want my breeders to know that they're getting the best vaccine handled correctly, that it's been shipped properly and stored properly. And you don't know what happens at the stores. You don't know what happens if the vaccine's not under your control. So we're pretty careful with it.
Right. Excellent. I think that is really, really all good and valuable information. And there's a lot of arguments either way. You know, my mom was always crazy about, well, I don't want to take him to the vet clinic because there's germs there, right?
Yeah, and that's not a crazy thing.
Right.
It's absolutely reason for concern. In our practice, we've been fortunate enough that we could design the building like we wanted it. And we actually have a garage that clients pull into. So they may never have those puppies in the hospital itself.
Nice.
So it's a nicer way to do it. Some people will have house calls done. There's, you know, a variety of different ways that you can manage minimizing the puppy's exposure.
Right. And I've gotten to the point now in my older age that I may very well do a lot of that stuff, but because I've moved my vaccines back to 8 weeks like everybody else, now what I'm doing is I'm taking that whole litter in for a well puppy check, vaccinations, you know, their first vaccinations and their microchip all in one visit. And that has become sort of my traditional way of doing it that's working pretty well for me.
Sure. And there's a lot of ways that you can juggle those things to work just depending on what your needs are and how your veterinarian can recommend those things.
Right. Excellent. All right. Well, Marty, thank you so much for talking to us about canine influenza and extra added bonus puppies.
Yeah, how can you not talk about puppies?
I mean, I've got a litter of 13 Spinoni in my house right now. It's just crazy down here.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly. Yeah, they were really concerned they weren't going to get a litter because they only did one live cover. I'm like, it'll be fine. You timed it just right.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it.
Nailed it.
For sure.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Marty. I appreciate your time, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
And now a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. ADF says, remember to thank the judges for your dog's award. And when you do, please make sure that you spell their names correctly. American Dog Fancier. Affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.